Hello, this is Jesse Liberty, and this is yet another podcast. Today I have an all-falafel-con show. I've got Jay Tower, Josh Eastburn, and Venkata Kopaka. I probably just mangled his name. Jay is a senior software architect at Falafel. He works primarily on the web and mobile. He's from Michigan, but he's currently living all over the country with his family in an RV, and we're definitely going to ask him about that. He's been with Falafel for 5 years. Josh is a senior software architect as well at Falafel. He's also working with web technology, specifically JavaScript and ASP.NET MVC and much more. And he resides in Charlotte, North Carolina. He's been with Falafel for 4.5 years, and that's not a coincidence because these guys know each other a long time. We're going to talk about that. Venkata Kopaka is a senior software engineer at Falafel. He's been there just longer than me, a little over a year. He was formerly working at Telerik on Sitefinity, and that remains his main area of interest at Falafel. And lately, he's really into AngularJS and also Xamarin. And I will say about Venkata that he said, oh, I'm sort of interested in Xamarin. And 2 weeks later, he's showing me how to do everything. And I just don't get that. But gentlemen, how are you?
Great. Good to be here, Jesse.
Very good, Jesse. How are you?
So this collection of people, the four of us, all work at Falafel and are all speaking at FalafelCon, which is Falafel's conference, which is interesting in itself because Falafel is not that big a company running this conference that is getting some extraordinary people, both internal, I'll say, and also some really interesting folks from outside of Falafel. Jay, have you been to any FalafelCon before?
Yeah, we had our premier event last year. And I was honored to be speaking there as well. And it was pretty cool to be on the roster with, you know, some pretty big names that were, like you said, both internal and external people. So proud to be going again and looking forward to learning something in everyone else's sessions.
And Josh, will this be your first time?
I also was a part of first FalafelCon last year. So it was an honor to speak and be a part of. I'm always amazed. Lino calls in all of his close friends who are, you know, the best known speakers in the industry, and it's quite an event.
Yeah, Lino's Rolodex must be, if it were a physical Rolodex, would be like the biggest Rolodex I've ever seen, because he does know absolutely everybody in the industry. Yep. And everybody knows him. Venkata, I assume this is your first one, as it is mine.
Actually not.
Oh, I'm the lone guy out. Okay.
I did not speak like the other guys, but I was there at last FalafelCon just as an attendee. I was on the Sitefinity panel last year, helping out answering questions for Sitefinity last year, but I was there as an attendee. I actually saw Jay and Josh talk last year.
Well, I want to talk about what each of you is going to be presenting at FalafelCon, and I also want to focus in on the fact that all of us work remotely. Some more than others, and what challenges we face as remote workers and how each of us overcomes them. But let's start by just going round robin on what your presentations will be. Venkata, why don't we start with you?
Sure. So my first talk is actually on a topic called Sitefinity Feather. Sitefinity has been a traditionally web forms application, so all the controls in Sitefinity and widgets in Sitefinity have been web forms driven. And people who've lived through web forms definitely know the pain of web forms. So what Sitefinity is actually doing nowadays is, and this is still in beta, mind you, so my talk is strictly going to be based out of a beta product, and it's still not released yet. But they're open source, they're on GitHub, so we're going to be swinging it right in the wild. So what my topic is going to be, and what Feather is actually, is a modern and intuitive convention-based UI framework for Sitefinity, which is strictly based off of like It's based off of convention-based frameworks like Bootstrap, and they have a lot of support on GitHub as well. And they are integrating a lot of AngularJS into Sitefinity Feather as well. So I'm actually really excited about this talk. And the second talk I'm doing is one of my favorites, using AngularJS in Sitefinity. Ever since Angular came out and I started using, absolutely fall in love with Angular. And that has been my go-to MVVM framework while writing web applications of late. So I'm going to be showing how to use AngularJS in Sitefinity, and also I'm going to be showing how to use AngularJS in Sitefinity along with our own product called Baba Ghanoush.
And what is Baba Ghanoush?
So Baba Ghanoush is a Sitefinity SDK that we here at Falafel have been developing for several years. Like, we've used it on a lot of client projects. So this has been around for like years and years. We just haven't formally called it a product up until three months ago, I think. Yes. So it has a bunch of wrappers around Sitefinity's API, and it's more like an opinionated framework which gives developers that are using Sitefinity a quick and easy way to get going on most Sitefinity tasks.
And that's now a product that's actually being sold.
It's actually a free product. We give it out for all the community. We want all the people using Sitefinity to benefit out of it. So we have a user voice where we listen to community on what things they want. We put them into the product right away. So it's pretty much a development in the open for Baba Ghanoush.
Okay, that sounds great. Jay, what will you be speaking on at FalafelCon?
Yeah, so I'm doing two different sessions also. The first one I'll be doing is one that I call Mobile Web Development is Easy with Kendo UI Mobile. And for those who aren't familiar with Kendo UI, it's a product of Telerik. There's both a free and then a paid supported version that adds a little bit of functionality. But Kendo UI Mobile is the part that kind of focuses around mobile websites. And it also works really well if you're doing like a Cordova-based application where you're actually embedding a mobile website into a native app wrapper. So it's kind of a double duty, two different types of development you can do with this technology. And it's got all the tools and tricks and things that you need as a developer, especially true of JavaScript, which is not necessarily everyone's favorite language, but Kendo UI adds a lot of real neat utility and a way to lay out your application. And then my second session is one called 30 Tools for Modern .NET Web Development in 60 Minutes. So this is actually inspired by one of my tech heroes and now my boss, Steve Smith, who years ago at a conference I saw him give, I think it was a two-part session, so it was 2 hours, and it was, I think, just ASP.NET tips and tricks, part one and two. And basically, he just went up in front and started listing off all the things that he's found useful when developing for ASP.NET. And of all the sessions I've ever been to, I don't recall ever taking more furious notes than in that session. And so I wanted to kind of replicate that concept and just kind of list out some of the things that I find useful. I know when I talk to other developers, or even better, when you watch over another developer's shoulder for the day and you see what they're doing and you say, hey, wait, what was that keystroke? Or, hey, wait, what is that tool that you just used to do that? Yep. I've been doing that myself, you know, manually. So I just wanted to kind of come up with my own list. My hope is that everyone will walk away with, you know, at least two or three things that they've never heard of before that are going to be really useful that next Monday when they go to work.
Yes, I'm looking forward to that session. I do want to put in your ear that we should have a conversation, possibly on a podcast, about figuring out a way to use Kendo UI Mobile and Xamarin, possibly using the Xamarin Razor library that lets you use CSHTML files. But there's got to be a way to get Kendo UI Mobile and Xamarin into one place.
Yeah, that would be interesting to play around with.
I think it's actually easily replaceable. The hybrid apps sample that Joe wrote is primarily jQuery mobile-based.
Oh, well, we should definitely have a conversation because my presentation at Evolve is based on Joseph's demo on that. So that's a conversation we'll have. But we've left Josh out. Josh, what are you presenting at FalafelCon?
I'll be giving two talks. The first one is what I call the Kendo UI Web Jumpstart. So I know there's a few other, like Jesse, I know you have a Kendo Angular and Jay's Kendo Mobile. This, my talk will be kind of like a good primer on what is Kendo. You know, a lot of people might think it's just widgets, but so much more. So we'll go through creating widgets and MVVM and data binding, data source, templates, and kind of give you a good base for future learning on Kendo. And then my second talk is going to be, it's called the Web Developer Toolbox, and it's about getting the most out of Chrome developer tools. I found in my own use, I use, you know, Chrome as most developers do. You know, your F12 DevTools is a very handy thing. Most of us use it pretty casually, though, and I realized after digging into the docs that I was really only using maybe, 40% of the capabilities that are there. So I'll be kind of giving a in-depth look at all the different capabilities of, network inspection, console, source, CSS, manipulation, DOM manipulation, memory management, and CPU performance tuning. So yeah, there's definitely a lot in there, and there's so much that my hope is just that attendees will be able to get an overview of the capabilities, and maybe a month later they'll be working on something and remember, I know that there is a way that DevTools will let me figure this out.
I don't want to turn this into a commercial, an extended commercial for Falafel or FalafelCon, but I do think that it's going to be a really interesting conference. There's not going to be a lot of time between when this gets posted and when FalafelCon actually happens, but we'll put a link to FalafelCon. It's in San Francisco this month. We'll put a link on the page for this. Falafel's a really interesting place. I've only been there a year. When I was hired, there were 16 employees. There's now a little more than twice that, so it's grown tremendously in the past year. Jay, you've been there 5 years. How many people were there when you started?
I was right around that 16 size or so, and then there was a short period of growth after that, and things kind of leveled out, and then, through just sort of normal attrition, a few of those people left, and we kind of have had that explosive growth you mentioned just in this last, year or so here.
And what's interesting about Falafel is that the variety of different kinds of work that is done is unusual. There's everything from an hour of phone support to projects where they have half a dozen developers I would say for 6 months, but I think it's turning into 3 or 4 years. So it's quite a range. And the other thing that's interesting is that the vast majority of the employees are remote. Nearly everyone. There's a few, I think 3 or 4 who work in the office full time. And Lino would not forgive me if I don't mention that Falafel just relocated into Borland's old offices. And he's just over the moon about that. But the rest of us are remote and also in multiple time zones. And has that always been true? Either Jay or Josh, has that been true since you've been there?
When I started, and I know Josh just started, 6 months after or so, so it was pretty much the same answer probably, but when I started, it was about 50-50. And that was kind of the answer I gave. So half the company worked in the Bay Area, at the office sometimes and at home others. And then the half of the company was all over the country. And that balance definitely has shifted in this last year. And, I think what's really smart about that is if you can kind of keep the culture and keep the quality of individuals that I feel like we have here at Falafel high, that it really allows you to recruit with no barriers. If you find a great developer as we have in Oklahoma, then you don't require them to move away from their family and relocate to a more expensive part of the country. They just work from right there because the great person is worth that.
One of the outcomes of having everybody so scattered is that we invest a lot of time and money in communication, in ways to keep in touch with each other. And so I can rattle off some of them. We use GoToMeeting extensively, and a couple of the other similar services. We lately have been using HipChat, which I think is working out quite well. We use Skype. What are some of the other communication products that I know that we just really spend a lot of effort on keeping in touch with each other and making sure everybody knows what is going on.
Yeah, those are certainly the primary tools. I know we've gone through, several trial periods of let's try out this great new tool and see if it's better or the same as what we already have. And I think it's kind of neat that we are continually evolving, what tools we use to communicate. Like you mentioned HipChat, that's fairly new, and that's been a great addition because it provides pretty much IM, but also provides those rooms, chat rooms, where, we're all working on a project together, we can share things and also be part of another room if we're working on another project together or another interest or things like that. So that's really worked out well.
I've actually done pair programming when I started, quite a bit of pair programming because I was so clueless. And I did some pair programming with you, Jay, and with others where we would use a GoToMeeting and share screens And it was, I thought, as effective, literally as effective as if we were sitting next to each other, except that neither of us could grab the keyboard very easily. But other than that, I thought it was extremely effective.
I think that what we'll find as we sort of start talking about this into more depth about this remote working thing is it's a double-edged sword, right? Every good thing has a bad side, and every bad thing has a good side too. So, you know, you may find that you're not around other people, which means that when they start talking about Star Wars, you're not distracted from what you're doing, you know. But on the flip side of that, you've got the negatives of, you know, maybe feeling a little less, a little more disconnected, or just a little harder to get a hold of somebody when you've got a quick question. I feel like that pair programming thing is a perfect example of it, because on GoToMeeting, you've got the benefit of, you know, we can share a screen or a mouse and keyboard. And, you know, I've done that pair programming physically present with people before, and you're always having to say slide over, and then the other person slides back over in front of the input devices. So GoToMeeting almost works better for that, I feel like.
I think that's right. And Venkata, you're sometimes in the office and sometimes remote. Is that correct?
Yeah. Most of the week, 4 days a week, I actually work from my home. And don't tell Lino that I said this, but that is actually when I'm most productive. And when I go into the office, I work on a smaller computer. I take my laptop to the office, so I don't have the luxury of my three big 24-inch monitors to drag things around. So that's probably one of the reasons why I feel a little less productive when I'm at the office. But, yeah.
Hi, this is Lino, and you won't be coming into the office anymore.
Yeah, I'm sure you're safe, Venkata. I don't think there's any way he could hear this conversation.
No, no chance. This is private and just between us. Josh, you have any reluctance or any major concerns about being remote? Any real big downside you see?
No, I mean, like Jay said, there are certainly two sides to it. And I had some. This is my first job that was pretty much 100% working remotely. Mm-hmm. I found though, there are people that, you know, it just doesn't work for them to work remotely. But certainly at Falafel, everyone there communicates well and collaborates really well remotely. And I think having that communication piece and just the right team in place that can work remotely, honestly, I don't think I could ever go back to a job that would require me to be in the office 100% of the time. So I think I'm spoiled.
Yeah, I have not worked in an office for 19 years, and I don't think I could. The productivity drop would be too intense. I find that the only downside of working at home has been that at times I was more out of touch with coworkers than I wanted to be until I hit Falafel. Falafel, I think, does an extraordinary job of creating team cohesiveness at a distance. Now, we do get together once a year, at least, for an annual meeting, but I don't think that's what does it. I think there's something about both the culture and the use of the technology that really makes it work.
Yeah, absolutely.
I agree. Yeah, you just reminded me, like, on my first day, I think, at Falafel, we have this wiki, which has, you know, a bunch of shared information for everyone. I remember on my first day, my boss at the time asking me to put, you know, my Google chat and my AOL IM and MSN IM at the time and all the, you know, technologies of that day. I know it's only like 5 years ago, but it's changed a lot since then.
Yes.
But I feel like that upfront, you know, make yourself available every way possible.
So Jay is breaking up a bit because,
you know, stuck around these last 5 years.
Jay, you're breaking up a bit. And the reason you're breaking up is because you are actually in, I mean, I alluded to this before, you're in an RV. Is that right? Even right now?
Yeah, even right now.
And where are you physically? Where's the RV located at the moment?
I'm in a place called Coeur d'Alene, Idaho.
And your plan is to circumnavigate the lower 48. Is that right?
Yeah, that's right. As you mentioned in my intro, I'm living in this RV right now. And it's not because I forgot to make the house payment for too long. Yeah, my wife and I had always talked about possibly when we retired, you know, we could travel and see some places. And I'm kind of a collector of experiences anyway. So all these beautiful places we have in this, you know, magnificent country of ours, just kind of felt like I was, you know, falling ever behind the number of places that I wished I had been to. And the older I got, it seemed like the more I was finding out about and the less I was having time to get to with my, you know, couple weeks of vacation every year. So out of that and this whole remote working idea, after about 3.5 years at Falafel, you know, sprung this crazy idea of what if we just took our normal lives and moved it around inside of an RV for a year. So you got to have a hook with every story. So our hook with this story is that we're going to drive through all 48 of the lower 48 states.
And you're documenting it as you go on a blog.
We are, yes. We've got a blog, 48statesproject.com. That's 48, the numbers, statesproject.com.
I must do a podcast with you and Sean Wildermuth, who is taking, I believe, a full year working as he travels through Europe.
Yeah, I heard about that. He just got married, right? And
yes.
He's kind of taking an extended honeymoon type of
thing. Very extended. With his incredibly powerful laptop, yes. And working and speaking at conferences and probably having a total blast. Let's talk briefly about your college experience. I know, Jay, you and Josh went to the same university and majored in computer science. And Venkata, you majored in computer science. Do you all feel that you got a lot out of that training?
Yeah, I absolutely did. And in a way, I kind of wish I could go back and take some of those classes again. Maybe the technologies obviously are different, but a lot of the fundamental concepts, I was just, you know, beginning to piece things together, and now it just comes naturally. So it took, you know, more years than I had in school to kind of put together all the major building blocks of development. But yeah, I thought it was helpful.
I spoke with Rachel Reese on a podcast, which we've not yet broadcast, and she was a math and physics major who discovered computers as part of her work, as part of her project, and never looked back, and said that it was very, very valuable.
I feel like my college experience was extremely positive, both, you know, socially, but also just the computer science program at Taylor. And part of that is, I think, the size of the program. It's Taylor is about a 2,000 student school, so I think the graduating class of computer science majors is probably 20 or 30 people. So when you would go through a class with those people, you'd go from one class to another with a lot of the same people,
mm-hmm.
and you got some great hands-on time with the professors, who also were required to, you know, rotate in to the industry, which meant that they weren't just teaching you theory; it was very practical. But I do feel like that education stuff is really about learning how to think, which a lot of people can do in a lot of different ways. I had somebody I know who's quite intelligent and a good programmer already ask me at 30 if I thought they should go back and get a college degree. I kind of felt like, you know, there's going to be that 20% of jobs where you can't even get your foot in the door because they've got that requirement. Your resume has to say bachelor's of science and something. But there's so many jobs out there. It really, you know, if you're already at that late stage in life and you've taught yourself to think quite clearly and already learned to trade some specific technologies, you know, what's the point?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Tell the next person who asks you that to write a book. It becomes a 600-page resume, and no one ever asks you where you went to school.
That's right. That's right.
Or these days, I guess it's do a plural site course.
There you go.
I agree with both the guys. You know, more than I just want to add, like, more than what the courses are, at least from what I took in the university, it actually helped me think how to approach a problem. And I used to write kernel code when I was in university for FreeBSD, which is Apple's main part of macOS. And I never wrote C program after that, but it actually helped me solve problems or think differently for solving problems. That's one of the reasons I liked universities back.
Well, clearly that's the right college, because if it's teaching you to think rather than any specific skill, that's what you're looking for.
Venkata, that felt like a little mini Apple ad embedded into this podcast.
Yeah,
think differently and everything in there.
A couple of you mentioned something near and dear, two things near and dear to my heart, AngularJS and Xamarin. How much opportunity are you getting to learn Xamarin and learn native mobile programming? Are you spending a fair amount of time on that, or is it still so new that it's hard to spend that much time?
With Xamarin, it's still not a mainstream, at least for the work that I'm doing, but it's taking more and more priority every single day. I've been talking to more and more customers who genuinely have a need for a native mobile application as opposed to going Cordova route. So I'm investing more and more of my time into it, and it's actually fantastic. The thing I like or love about Xamarin is C#, and I can't write another piece of code in C# without async and await. And I remember Miguel last year at Build, I think, he was doing this demo on stage with Anders or someone, and he started writing this app, and he writes a normal method, and then he puts async in front of it and says, hey, we're all civilized people, let's just do this from now on. And I've been writing async ever since then, actually.
That must be quite a thing to see Miguel and Anders on the stage at the same time. I have to say that I think Anders is living proof that there are people who are just a different degree of brilliant, who are just so enormously creative and gifted. He almost stands alone in the industry, and I think doesn't get nearly enough credit given everything he's done.
Yeah, I agree with that. I feel like every time he announces, you know, the next version of, you know, whatever project he's working on at the time, I know he's been on C# and TypeScript and some other things, but I feel like I'm always one iteration behind. Like, I'm just starting to get the last thing he was telling me was important.
Yes.
And he's already moved on and invented a new one.
So, Jay, I got to tell you that looking for things to make sure we covered tonight, I went to the Falafel site, and in your little biography, it says you work on this and that, and more recently, Silverlight. So you may want to get that updated.
No, I'm just starting to get into Silverlight.
What's wrong with Silverlight?
I think it's really going to take off.
Well,
that's funny. Yeah, I guess that's
it. It breaks my heart, and that's one of the things that I really, frankly, really like about Xamarin. In addition to many things, but one thing is the new Xamarin has Xamarin Forms, which is where Silverlight and WPF programmers go to resuscitate their XAML skills, and that's very cool. Venkata, you specifically called out Angular and Xamarin. Which one has the more difficult learning curve? Which one are you struggling with, or are you struggling with either?
It's not much of a struggle, but Angular definitely has a bit of steeper learning curve, at least for me, just because of the number of concepts that it involves. But the moment you start to see the bigger picture in Angular and you start to get its concepts, it's actually really, really easy to use, and it makes everything so much faster and easier to write.
When you start with Angular, you learn some of the built-in directives, mm-hmm. some of the essentials of ngapp and so forth. Where my experience is that there's a bend in the learning curve, that it starts off pretty easy, and then there's this steep learning part, and then it gets easy again. Where did you hit that wall? What concepts in Angular were the, you know, I need this to be productive and it's not obvious?
So the main, I think I can actually correlate to that. The pretty common directives like ng model, you kind of grasp that pretty easily. What I had problems with after that was trying to understand what a factory or a service or a provider in Angular would do. And all three things would essentially mean the same thing, but they would do totally different things mm-hmm. when you put into Angular's context. And that's where, I don't want to give you too many shout-outs, but Dan Wallin's course really helped me out. And he has a fantastic course on YouTube, which is about 60 minutes of Angular. And I think he's doing the same talk at FalafelCon this year. And he kind of brought that clarity to me. And then from there on, it became pretty clear for me.
Now, my solution to that has been to just use factories. Is that going to work for me?
Yeah, I've always been using factories because it felt more easier. There are slight differences between factories and services and providers. I've never had to really dig into providers that much, but I've had a couple of scenarios where I had to use services as opposed mm-hmm. to factories. But factories have been my de facto so far.
And Josh, you do a tremendous amount of JavaScript. What are the libraries that you're most comfortable with and that you like the best?
Kendo is certainly filling a larger and larger role in what's needed for enterprise web applications. But yeah, there's certainly lots of other pieces I'd like to pull in. Underscore Lodash is great for working with arrays and collections. Moment.js for working with time-based calculations and conversions. I've also had, you know, a few like niche libraries that working with a lot of touch events in web applications. There's something called Hammer.js, which simplifies, kind of makes the click and the touch events work in a more similar fashion so you can handle them with less complex code. So yeah, I'm always kind of on the, I know there's other falafel colleagues who are always, you know, looking on the horizons for the next latest and greatest. So I enjoy working with them and kind of feeding off them to see the next great JavaScript library. I should.
But you're solidly in the Kendo and jQuery world.
Right.
Camp.
Yes. Yep. I would enjoy to, I'm looking forward to attending your talk, Jesse, on Kendo Angular. I've had a little bit of exposure to AngularJS, but since my current workload is not in that area, I haven't spent a whole lot of time in it, but looking forward to checking that out.
Well, I've got about 5 minutes of solid material.
Excellent. Would you mind just telling me now that?
the thing is that there are going to be people there who are there because they don't know Kendo, but they do know Angular. And there are going to be people there who, for the opposite reason, and then there'll be people who don't know either. And and so it's going to be an interesting task and challenge to try to say something that's of interest to everyone. It turns out that working with Kendo and Angular is pretty straightforward. At first, it seemed daunting because I thought of Kendo so intimately tied with jQuery, and it works so beautifully with jQuery. But it turns out that it works very well with Angular as well. In fact, so much so that when I started this presentation, started building it, Angular was a separate library for Kendo, a special adapting library of wrappers, and now they folded it into the core. So it actually is a first class citizen, I suppose you could say, alongside jQuery as an option.